And we are back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 393 with Mr. Anthony Sika, actually. What's going on, man? How are you doing? Hey,
how you doing, Master Swag King?
I'm just getting old at this point, you know? Back killing me. Wife,
Not as old as I am, buddy. Not as old as I am.
I see. You're wearing a Marvel t-shirt, actually. And so I would imagine that you were just like, you know, head over heels in love with their decision to cast, the female Silver Surfer before the male one.
No.
I don't think anybody was.
Can they not just get their head out of their ass for a minute? I mean, you know.
Yeah. I don't think it's possible at this point.
I mean, I saw the Kirby stuff in the Marvel's Greatest Reprints in 75, 74 when I first picked it up. And, you know, I'm all good with the female counterparts, but introduce them later, if at all. You know, Norrin Rad is the Silver Surfer, and he should be in it, you know. And that's don't have him in it at all. You know, go to the Mole Man and Doctor Doom, and you know, I mean, supposedly it's retro, it's set in the 60s, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, I agree.
And if they Quantum Mania travels some to the modern time somehow, maybe that explains an alternate thing or whatever. But you know what? Just tell a good story. It's Marvel's founding family. It's the first family. It's what set the universe on fire back in 1963, 64.
They're the first actual group of characters before like Justice League, JSA, Avengers, I think. They're one of the first.
No, but it's Marvel's first group. And it hit like none other because, you know, you did have the Justice Society and the Justice League just before that. And, you know, you had groups, but nothing was like, there was never a family dynamic, you know, and it was one of its kind. And, you know, I don't know why Marvel can't do it right. It's not that hard, you know, I'm not a filmmaker, so I'm not going to say it's not that hard or not that easy, but script wise, it's not that hard. They have like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of backstory to glean.
You think those people actually are going to, that's the thing is they do have access to getting all the material. Now, will they ever read it? That's the real thing.
You know, all they have to do is read the first 10 issues of the Fantastic Four by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And that's it. That's all you need. You don't even have to get into the Galactus Silver Surfer stuff. You could tell a good story with the Mole Man and Dr. Doom right off the bat, and Mole Man, Dr. Doom, and Prince Namor, if they didn't screw that up in Wakanda Forever, that could have been a great, you know, great first three characters, the first everything, you know. But whatever, it is what it is, you know. And
It's we'll one of those things where, you know,
I hope it's good.
For Silver Surfer, I'm not the hugest, like, I'm not saying I hate the character or anything. I'm not the hugest fan of his. I don't have that much material from him, from like comic book wise, but I know about the character a little bit. And what people don't understand is that Norrin, can't remember how to pronounce his name sometimes. Yeah. The Silver Surfer has an incredibly tragic, hard story being from what happened to him. So for anyone who doesn't know, Galactus comes to his planet. He's like, I'm going to eat this because he's a world eater. He's like, hey, I can eat this planet, or you just do my bidding and get me other planets to eat. That's it. Right? And people are like, wait a minute. He has a family on that planet, and he leaves them to make sure that his planet can be safe to go help Galactus eat other planets so his one planet can live. Just you know how much character that would take to do? That's an incredibly well-written, well-thought-out character, honestly.
They actually did it right in the second movie. In the second movie, the original, you know, the ones from, 2003?
Oh, 2004? It's about the one with the Dust Galacticus cloud.
but the Silver Surfer, they did actually properly. It was everything else that they did wrong in that film.
Right.
But the Silver Surfer was actually done right. His backstory was there. His mission was there. His kind of love thing with Sue Storm was there. But then everything else was a train wreck. But the Silver Surfer in that film was actually really good. That was the one shining moment of that movie. But, you know, Norrin Rad's, you know, he, that being the Herald of Galactus, what's funny is them choosing to to make a female Silver Surfer, you know, his love interest, his beloved character. There's a lot of female heralds for Galactus, like Frankie Storm, or Frankie is the Human Torch's girlfriend, and she is an actual herald of Galactus and takes over for the Silver Surfer. So, I mean, there's actually in the canon of Marvel comics, there are actually female heralds too. Why they had to take Norrin Rad's spot, I don't know. But hopefully Norrin Rad's in it too. You know, that's, there could be a little bait and switch there on Marvel, you know, because more people are talking about it today than they were a week ago. So, you know, just because she's in it as the female Silver Surfer doesn't mean that the male Silver Surfer is not in there. And that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping it's a little, you know, it's a little bait and switch there. And hopefully we get an actual Norrin Rad character too.
Yeah, that's what I've said to people too. Is like, I will give them the time potentially to announce the male version of the Silver Surfer. The thing that throws me off with some people when they talk about this is, oh my God, it's like, well, guys, for anyone who doesn't really know comics very well, everything you can think of has probably already been done to the point where people have been using the line, well, it's in the comic books. Well, there's several things wrong with that statement. For one, just because it's in the comic books doesn't make it good. Second, sure. Look at it like movies, right? So if a movie is not received very well, a lot of people are not going to like it nor view it very much, and it's not going to do very well. Think of the same thing for comics. Her comic book, I'm pretty sure, from what I've checked, because I don't care about this version of that character, started in 2012, from the version that people are pointing to. Okay, so in 2012, you remember this. Remember they did all new Marvel, where they try to swap out all their male characters for females, and no one liked that? Well, good. There'd be a reason no one actually read that, because Marvel was doing some stupid shit regarding their male characters.
Yeah.
So the fact that everyone had to look her character up goes to show you no one knew what that version of the character was. When you think Silver Surfer, you think Norrin Rad. Right. That's it. It's almost like it's one of the few compa characters where you don't think of any other version but him. That's very rare for that to happen too, but everyone knows Silver Surfer is Norrin Rad. Like, normies would even know his name, because before there was a movie with his name in the titles. So if anyone, to use the line, you know, on Twitter, you always get people that'll be like, well, all of a sudden now there's a bunch of people that care. It's like, what crack are you smoking? Yeah. So before this casting announcement happened, I'm supposed to believe that no one else was talking about Silver Surfer, but until this very moment. It's like, that's ridiculous. What level of stupidity are we even arguing with that?
And that's the thing too. You know what? Silver Surfer, his introduction or her introduction or their introduction, wherever they're going with this, that should have been waited. That should have been held off until a sequel if the first one does well.
Yes.
To be honest with you, the Fantastic Four, in its two incarnations in the movies, and then the third one, if you count the Roger Corman 1980s aired on TV one, you know, they're not real origin stories. And I have a feeling that this first Fantastic Four movie should be like Spider-Man 1 was by Sam Raimi in the year 2001 or whenever it came out. It should do the job of actually telling normies who the hell the Fantastic Four are, making a live action Incredibles film really is what they need to do, and center on the family conflict of the Fantastic Four and stick to the Mole Man or Dr. Doom, do them properly, and leave Galactus and Silver Surfer for a later time. But the thing is, Marvel has DC-itis now. They want to cram everything as quick as possible into one movie, because they really don't know how long their fandom is going to last. You know, and my thing is that, you know, with the Fantastic Four, it's just they're great characters. You know what? I'm not a huge fan of Pedro Pascal, but I can objectively say I know he's a good actor, and he can shave his mustache off. So the idea that he can't play Reed Richards is ridiculous. I mean, he's been in movies before The Mandalorian. You know, he's made films.
Only performance of his that I really didn't like was in Wonder Woman 1984, when he was whatever he was in that movie. I forgot the villain's name.
Yeah, like Max, Max, whatever. But
yeah,
but you know, my point is though, is like everybody was like, "Oh, he's Latin and he can't play Reed Richards." Well, if you shave his mustache off, he's not Latin. He's a white guy. He's a 40-year-old white guy, and he's fine as Reed Richards. Mm-hmm. The casting for the Fantastic Four, I think, is actually good. But it's all about the story, and I want it to be real 60s. It needs to look like Fantastic Four in an episode of Mad Men. And if they do that right, I think people are going to like it. And Silver Surfer, Schmurfer, I don't care what they do with, you know, because you know what? The name of the movie is not the Silver Surfer. The name of the movie is the Fantastic Four. So everyone should relax and wait till they see a trailer or wait till they see, you know, whatever. Because, you know, they might surprise us, I'm hoping. You know, but, you know, I'm not optimistic, but, you know, with their track record lately, but I'm hoping they surprise us. I'm hoping that things turn around and they'll realize, hey, this is how we should make a movie again, you know?
Yes, sir. And I want to start here. I'll start with your origin story. So how was your life growing up, actually?
My life growing up, I was born in 1971. I picked up my first comic book in 1975. My dad was a truck driver. And also back then in the 70s and in the early 80s, every gas station, every supermarket, every convenience store you went into, there was a spinner rack or there was a wall full of comic books. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with the Fantastic Four when my grandfather bought me a 6-inch record, the little records that used to play with the, and you had a book. And the first line was Susie murdered by Dr. Doom. And it was a thing talking. And it was one of those read-along books. I learned to read from those books. And then the first comic book I actually bought, there were two of them. And ironically, they were written and drawn by the same people. It was a Marvel Premiere Presents magazine-size black and white comic, and it was Star-Lord. And it was the original story of Star-Lord and like his second appearance. And it was written by Chris Claremont, and it was drawn by John Byrne and Terry Austin. And it's all black and white. I have it on my shelf, the same copy that I got in 1975, 76. And then my other copy was ironically the same artists and the same writers. It was X-Men 113. And X-Men 113, drawn by John Byrne and Terry Austin, with the X-Men are captive underneath, underground, under some lava volcano in Magneto's lair. Magneto has been thought dead for all these years since the Savage Land, 60s Neil Adams stories. And all of a sudden, Magneto is alive and well, and he's captured all of the X-Men, and he has them all bound with inhibitors, blocking their mutant abilities, and they're unconscious. And he has this little robot maid in a French maid outfit feeding them all. And it's really kind of really an S&M dream thing with the X-Men. It's a very weird thing. But again, X-Men 113 and Star-Lord, both drawn by John Byrne, got me hooked on comics as a child. I grew up an only child until I was 18 years old when my folks, when my parents gave birth to a girl, my sister. But my first 18 years of life growing up in New York, I was an only child. When I was in high school in the 80s, I still read comics and bought comics, but I had to hide them because if you were caught with comic books in your locker or your backpack in the 1980s in high school, you were definitely going to be bullied or ostracized or whatever. But I kind of had, and even though I was a nerdy kid, I did have a cool factor in that I played in rock bands. So I was a musician in high school. But I also listened to, I read a lot of comic books, and I started drawing when I was in high school, you know, and there you go. Growing up, after college, I got a job in the 90s, and I was actually making real money, and I hadn't bought a comic in like years. And all of a sudden, I walk into a comic book store, and I see Wildcats and Youngblood and Gen 13 and Lady Death. And She, which is right behind me on the wall over here. Mm-hmm. And I see Witchblade and all these weird hot chick girl, bad girl comics. And then then what that reignited in me was that reignited all the 80s indie comics that I used to read when I was in high school and when I was in elementary school. I used to go hunt down black and white 2000 AD comics from England, and they featured art by Brian Boland and Carlos Esquerra doing Judge Dredd. I was reading Judge Dredd in 1984, long before Sylvester Stallone knew who he was, or, you know, recently, about 10 years ago, the new movie, when Anthrax was singing songs called I Am the Law about Judge Dredd. That's when I was reading Judge Dredd and all that cool 2000 AD stuff. And that's how I got hooked on indie comics. And then from there, even though I was underage, I was under 18, my local comic book store used to like smuggle me adult comics. And when I mean adult comics, I don't mean porno or anything, but comics that had super graphic violence or nudity in them or adult themes. I started collecting Love and Rockets by the Hernandez brothers. And that kind of, you know, gave me a little influence on the stuff I like to draw and stuff I like to write and things like that. Fast forward the mid 90s, you know, I'm a creative director at an ad agency. I play in a rock band. I wanted to get into comics. I went to every comic book convention. I also moved from New York to Florida, where I'm speaking to you right now. And I was in Florida and I went to every convention in Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, okay. Whatever. I met Todd McFarlane, Rob Liefeld, Billy Tucci, Jim Lee, Mark Silvestri, John Byrne, Chris Claremont, Dave Cockrum, George Perez, 8 million times. George Perez didn't live too far from me. I've met George Perez, the late, great George Perez, probably 6 times in my life. Talked to him, chatted with him, have a million autographed copies of his work. All these people I met, I handed editors scripts and drawings and illustrations. But you know what? Alas, back then, if you handed them an original IP, people at Marvel and DC would write you a letter and say, we don't want to see this. We want to see a Spider-Man script. Well, ironically now, if, you know, fast forward 20, 25 years, if you go to submit a script with their characters, they might sue you just even for giving them a script with your characters. You have to kind of be in the industry. No one accepts solicitations really. And no one would want to, because working for the majors, the mainstream comics is like working at McDonald's. You know, you have to do your own stuff. So fast forward 2018, 2019, 2018, I decide, you know, at the age of like 48 or 49 years old, I say, you know what, I need to like write and draw my own book, because I want to work the conventions. Since I actually am not a professional, I'm going to do my own books, work conventions, do store signings, all that. So in 2018, I started drawing and writing a comic called Oh My God, a real Reader's Digest synopsis. Girl has a one night stand with an angel. She doesn't know he's an angel. She winds up being possessed by the almighty Lord and the Holy Trinity. But then halfway through the miniseries, the 6 issues I published, halfway through, she finds out that it's actually the devil that's inside of her. And all the demons and all the angels are coming to Earth to kill the devil. Okay. And then the, you know, the rapture starts, yada, yada, yada. It is what it is. And then, we have a big finale. So I did that book, Iron Man, Master Swag King, Top G, all your aliases. I did that before I got into crowdfunding of any sort. So I was literally Facebook messaging people just like you did to me last week. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, hey, are you interested in my comic book? And I was
Doing the whole, basically the version of a door-to-door salesman tactic.
Yeah, I was doing the Ripperverse on a really small scale. Like I wasn't doing 1.3 million. I was doing like 5 books. So, But what it was, I was happy because let me tell you something. There are plenty of deals where I found people in Florida that lived by me, and I like met them at the Target and sold them out of the back of my car.
I was That's like, what I told people to do. Go yeah, out, like, do like what like the school, the Mexicans like, do in like your areas. It's like
old school mixtapes, you know? Yeah, hey, you want to hear my tape? You know, that shit? I'm from New York, so I saw plenty of that, you know? Hey, you want to buy a car stereo out of the back of my trunk? You know, kids watching this, they have no idea what I'm talking about, but people used to sell car stereos out of the back of their car. So anyway, long story short, I did that. I published 6 issues all by myself. 6 issues, 24 pages an issue times. So 6 times 24. I don't know. I drew over 120 pages of artwork.
For your first initial book. Yeah.
For the initial 6 issues. And I thought, okay, now I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Then I went on YouTube and I discovered, oh, look at all these people yelling at each other or crowdfunding or whatever. You know, I was watching all the comic skaters and I was watching all the other people and this and that. And I'm like, look at all the money these guys and gals are making. I don't even want to make half of that money because I'd have to pay taxes on it. But if I could just make some to pay for my books, that'd be great. So,
right. Mm-hmm.
2020, 2 years after I did Misty, 2 years after I did, oh my God, I published issue one of a book that we're going to talk about tonight called Misty America. Misty America, different covers, boom, boom.
Got some photo covers with some ass. Oh yeah,
because ooh, you know what? I'm heavily influenced by the 90s, 90s, yeah. 90s, 90s. Like I told you, 90s bad girl, image type, big guns, big boobs, big muscles, exaggerated poses, shit, okay? Stuff, excuse me. So anyway, I have photo covers. I got drawn covers. You know, it's all there. And everything I do, so I launched Misty America 1. Okay. I didn't light up the world with it. I made like, I don't know, $1,200, $1,300, something like that.
Pretty respectable. Yeah.
Yeah. First time. And then I really liked it. But then COVID hit.
Oof.
As I was in the middle of Misty, which I literally launched Misty the same month COVID came out. Mm-hmm. So COVID was released along with Misty America. And that probably dampened sales a little bit. Right after that, I started putting together another character, totally different, still a bad girl, but called Venerella. You'll see her over to this side, okay? Venerella, of course, the name is a take on Vampirella, but nothing to do. She's a warrior queen from Venus. Mm-hmm. And the whole, and there's actually a Dave Stevens Vampirella homage cover. Mm-hmm. For issue one, you know, and Venerella is pretty much she is a warrior queen from Venus. Mm-hmm. Okay. Big kind of Star Warsy alien thing. It's a family tragedy, comedy, Shakespearean thing. Her Venus used to be a powerful planet. Climate change and the war between Mars and Earth and Venus kind of ravaged the planet. Now all the Venusians are living underground. The queen, her mother, died in the war, and daddy and her brother are assholes. And they don't want her to have any power. So they wind up killing her lover. They wind up throwing her in prison. It's like a horror Disney story. And she's a Disney princess on Venus, kicking ass, eating people, beheading people, and trying to get vengeance on first the humans, the earthlings that killed her mother and her lover, and then on her brother and her father. Spoiler, she's imprisoned right now. Every story I do has a cliffhanger at the end. Every single last page.
Is there a reason for that?
I'm sorry?
Is there a reason for that?
Yes, because I want you to say, holy shit, I got to read the next issue. Yeah, I mean, because that's it. In the crowdfunding world, I don't want to be final and you know, a lot of people buy stuff. I see this habit of people buying things just to buy them, whether it's a, like, I'm going to bring up Eric July's Ripa versus, like, people not actually knowing what it's about because they have actually not because it's so vague, but maybe they haven't opened it to read it. They're just buying it, collecting it, you know, or like, I'll ask my own backers, what do you think of my story that they got in the mail a month ago? And they'll be like, I haven't read it yet. And I'm like, well, what'd you buy it for? You know what? I'm glad you're supporting me, but I'd really like you to crack it open and look at it. But I digress. Let me back up a little. So Venerella 1, I released in 2020, the beginning of 2020. Oh, no, I'm sorry, the summer of 2020. Unfortunately, my wife of 18 years got leukemia. And while I was doing Venerella 2, she passed away. And in 2022, in June of 2022, so 2 years ago this summer, I was finished crowdfunding. I was totally funded on Venerella 2, which I think raised $2,000-something.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Every book my crowdfunding goes up. Venerella 1 was like 27 or almost 3,000.
Okay.
So Venerella 2 then was a little less because, you know, the second issue is always a little less for everybody. But again, still okay. But what happened is I was the tragedy in my life. I have a son, you know, the whole thing for my family, for me, just devastated me to the point where I put down my pencil. I put down my pen and I stepped away from the comic, this whole YouTube thing. I stepped away from the crowdfunding. I stepped away from even drawing because I was so, I wanted just to get away from the way I was living my life. And by doing that, I was a little late with my book for Venerella 2. Mm-hmm. Well, everyone that backed me knew what happened. And in January of this year, I inked my last page, lettered it, and it has been actually, as I'm speaking to you, Venerella 2 has been completely fulfilled, except for three packages I need to send to Europe.
Oh, and, you know, obviously sending over there is...
Yeah, and when costly. I send it to them, they're not going to get it till 2026 anyway, but that's beside but what happened to me is I got a new lease on life this year, and then tragedy struck me again, whereas I just 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I literally... I lost my job of 15 years 3 weeks ago.
No way.
The people I work for, I worked for 13 and a half years for this company. And then they were bought by another company. And I worked a year and a half for this new company. Mm-hmm. And then corporate people decided, hey, we're going to eliminate your job. And they said, bye. So the minute I got home that night, as shocked as I were, I started putting together the campaign for Misty America 2 because I put Misty America 1 out. I left it hanging on the last page. And then I did Venerella. And the only reason I did Venerella is because it was on a roll. I literally created, I drew and wrote, I illustrated two 32 page books in 5 months. But what happened is when I was done with the second book, that's when I had my tragedy and I didn't fulfill it in a timely fashion. But it was done other than one page. However, for Misty America, it's an election year. I wanted a patriotic, badass, time-traveling, super-powered heroine back. And I thought to myself, okay, I waited long enough. I need to put out a second issue. Now, my campaign is not lighting the sky on fire. I've raised $625. Now, I have 57 days left, and I've already exceeded my goal. So I'll put it in demand and all that. Once I fulfill that, or once I cease my Indiegogo campaign, I may go to start put it on Kickstarter, too, or something like that. I'm very naive when it comes to the whole crowdfunding game. Mm-hmm. But I'm not naive about my work. So, you know, that's the thing. I'm real passionate about indie comics. I'm really passionate about my aesthetic of comics because I feel like what I'm doing is a little bit more punk rock than a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. I don't want to look mainstream. Now, see, I'm a graphic designer with, you know, 30 plus years experience doing this. So when it comes to my covers and my layout and all that shit.
Looks very dynamic. Yeah.
You're going to see my covers from across the comic book store or across the convention booth or whatever, you know, and that's my thing is, you know, like, and when I do a thing, you know, I'll do retro stuff. I'll do flats to make it look old school, but you know what? I still do, you know, their indie comics or black and white interiors, color covers, black and white interiors, A, because it's cheaper, B, because I don't want to color it. I draw, I write it, I draw it, I create it, I letter it, I publish it. The colorist would be one more little thing that I'd have to do to hold up the thing. And again, like I said, mm-hmm. I'm really invested in old school stuff like this from the early 90s, late 80s, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, it's an education for folks who are in their 30s or 20s. You know, if you've never seen, you know, comics like Love and Rockets or Razor or mm-hmm. the early She comics or The Crow, you know, that's all black. Hell, let me go to the source. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, the issues that are worth thousands of dollars, they're black and white. Mm-hmm. You know, Eastman and Laird, they did black and white work because they were indie comic makers. And those are the kind of comics, although I grew up reading Fantastic Four and the Avengers and the X-Men and all that stuff, still, though, the black and white stuff was what was cool to me. So if you can think about it this way. The Marvel and DC comics that I love and was reading is like Kiss and Aerosmith and Led Zeppelin, AC/DC. Okay. The black and white comics that I was reading is like the Dead Kennedys and Black Flag and Circle Jerks and the Ramones. And, you know, in other words, it's more street. It's hipper because it's more indie, so to speak, and it's alternative. And the thing is that I don't want to ever be anything I'm not. A cat shouldn't be a dog shouldn't be a cat, you know? And the thing is, I want a clean look. I want a marketable product. Mm-hmm. But I want to, like, my slogan on my business cards and my website and everything, my Facebook and all that, is like punk rock on paper. You know, it's like, and again, I don't mean that, you know, punk, a lot of people criticize punk rock. And here's the deal. I'm a musician. And I'm humble enough to say I'm an accomplished musician. I've been playing music since I was 12 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm 53. So do the math. You know, I can play Rush and Aerosmith and AC/DC and Kiss songs. I can sing them. I can play them. I can do whatever. I can record whatever you want. However, sometimes you just like to get down and dirty and play some punk rock, you know, and really rock out and find that groove instead of trying to musically masturbate, so to speak. And I feel the same way with my comic books. My comic books are super, super easy to read, easy to follow, good dynamics and all that, you know? And then, so that's my life story, sir, in a nutshell. But more importantly, Misty America 2 is now funding on Indiegogo.
Yes, sir. I was going to bring that up right now, actually. That would
be great. And I was ready to bring it up too, if you wanted. So you read my mind.
Yes. Well, the thing that I wanted to ask you before you go over it is that's something that the fans – that's because I'm not trying to pull a Disney here and attack the fans. But I would say it's constructive criticism for the fans is that if you get someone's book, you can read it. That's why you bought it. Now, the creators will always enjoy your money. Because that's the thing. We're doing this they're putting out a campaign to get it funded. Obviously, that's not the reason, because if you could just fund it yourself, you just fund it yourself. But
yeah,
it costs a lot of money. So the best way for these indie comics to get a lot more better word of mouth for a lot more of the general public is to review, is to read them.
Even
if you want to put out your general thoughts on social media, put your general thoughts out on Instagram, Facebook, Threads, wherever you're at. Doesn't matter. Take a picture of it. Tag the person in it if they're on that same platform.
Just that goes
a long way, you know.
Well, that's the thing with me. When I did Venerella and when I did Misty America One, I had a lot of folks that gave me reviews and did YouTube, you know, streams with me where they reviewed my book and they had me on talking about it. I had this little weird thing though. I don't know who watches your show, who doesn't, but I got kind of like, it wasn't that I was canceled, but I went on all these shows in 2020 or 2021, excuse me, when Biden was elected, and it was January 6th, I guess, was the whole Capitol building thing, whatever. I happened to be on all these channels of folks in South Florida, mm-hmm. folks in Miami, New York, you know, real liberal areas. And the thing is, too, is I never, ever, ever, ever talk politics of any sort, because I feel that it's not, I think it's rude. Okay. If you want to spend money on my book, I don't care whether you're a leftist flag carrying SJW person, or if you are a alt-right crazy person, I don't care. Right. As long as your money's green, I'm good with you. Okay. Like, because if you came to me at a convention or a comic book store signing, I wouldn't know anything about you. You know, I don't care. I'm just there to talk about comic books.
Yeah.
I believe that politics have always been in comic books, and they always will be, because that's the whole point, that they mm-hmm. reflect things in society. I get that.
Yes.
However, I was on a million of these YouTube channels of certain people that had big bandwidths, but they were very left-leaning. Now, I just nodded my head at everything they said about, you know, Trump or Biden or whatever was going on at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just was trying to promote my Misty America. Mm-hmm. Well, I made the stupid mistake of sharing a package that I got from a certain Cyberfrog creator. I threw a picture of Twitter up and I said, thank you, you know, EVS, for this great comic book, right? Because mm-hmm. I was a big fan of Green Lantern, you know, and all his work. And I got that and people started coming after me saying I was an alt-right person and a Nazi and all this shit, just because I shared a picture of Ethan Van Sciver's Cyberfrog package that I received in the mail, you know, that I love the comic book and I was reviewing the comic book. Yeah. And people came after me like I was like a canceled DC artist or something. And I couldn't believe it because I was a nobody. You know what I mean? I was absolutely nobody with no voice. I wasn't an Ed Piskor. I wasn't an Ethan Van Sciver. I wasn't a John Malin. I wasn't a nobody.
That's how mentally deranged people are, dude. To the point where you could just post something that you received in the mail because you're just posting about, hey, I got this thing that I'm super happy about my purchase.
Right.
And then people just lose their minds.
But the truth of the matter is, right, those same people did a whole interview with, as I said, if you look to the left of me there, there's a She poster by Billy Tucci. Okay.
I see it. Yeah.
All right. Billy Tucci is a comic skater, but because he's not as vocal as someone else, he's okay to be on their show, but I'm not. And I'm not even up. I wasn't even under that influence. I just kind of, I was appreciating artwork. So it is what it is. My point is though, mm-hmm. the internet is not real life. And comic books aren't real life either. So everybody needs to relax. But that's how I got into Indiegogo, because mm-hmm. I got so much hatred from these folks. And they were all on Kickstarter. So I said, well, I'm going to play the part of the comic skater and I'll just put my stuff on Indiegogo, you know, and a lot. And I've been on streams with big folks from that realm and it's helped me out, you know. But, you know, do I care or do I not care? No, I really don't. I'm so small that I don't care, you know, and I didn't care at the time. I was just confused.
Right.
And they thought because it was Misty America, I was some sort of like, you know, what? No, Misty America is about a girl named Misty Lee Warren, who is a wrestler. Okay. Yes. And that's her wrestling name. And she decides to go into the military because her sister is killed in action. And she's so good at her job. She's a killing machine for the military that she's sent to a covert time traveling time force type commando unit. And the whole tagline is she fights in the past to save the future. So what you're showing here on your screen is variant covers for Misty America, A, B, C, D, and E. And they start at just $15, ladies and gentlemen, just $15.
It's pretty affordable.
$15, yeah. Little man, put that shit in my hand. $15, man, and bundles. And I have photo covers, drawn covers, you know, all done by me. Photos are all by me too. You know, and the thing is that it's $15. You get a book, you get some exclusive prints, campaign only. And for $35, you can get all the books. And when you check out, since you're on Misty America 2, for $10, you can add on Misty America 1. And also something a little unusual for a little higher priced, I have original artwork for sale. So everything I do, which, you know, once you get off this page, before I conclude, I'll show you some of my original Bristol boards. I don't do anything on computers other than scan them. There's no digital assets harmed in the making of my comic. There's no 3D assets, digital assets, no cheating, really. Everything is, I mean, I touch up some things here and there. But, you know, my book is all done by hand. Everything's an illustration. You know, they're all 11 by 17 Bristol boards. I think Master Swag likes some of those photo covers. Anyway. What? Yeah. And if you order, by the way, if anyone watches the stream, okay. Where are you streaming, by the way? You're on
this is Rumble, Twitter, and Twitch, actually.
Okay, so anybody watching the stream tonight, okay, when you buy the book, make a note somewhere that you saw me on Master Swag King. And in addition to whatever you buy, I'll give you a free 11 by 17 Misty America poster. Okay. Now I want to show you something, Master. This is the original artwork. See, it really doesn't change.
It looks great. That looks
awesome. This is my 11 by 17 artwork. Mm-hmm. You know, it's on Bristol board. Here's the color version of it. You know, it is what it is. And the new cover, what I call the Luger cover, is actually for sale. You know, it's her waiting in the doorway to shoot some Nazis.
Oh,
you know?
God.
Oh, and that's the interesting thing. Mm-hmm. I told you she's a super-powered time traveler. Mm-hmm. The first issue is set in 1998.
Yes.
When you get, you'll see, it just says on my inside cover, 1998. When you get the new issue, like Venerella, you will see, you'll get a page in the inside cover that says story so far. So you are going to pick up the story, even if you don't pick up the first issue, which I would love you to do that for $10. When you pick up the second issue, if you have no idea what you're buying and you're just collecting it because you like boobies on a cover,
that sounds
you're going to open it up and it's going to say the story so far. And you're going to have a very detailed story about what you're reading and why you're reading it and my influence behind reading it. And as another add-on, I have trading cards for all the characters of Misty America. Okay. I even have photo covers. I have all the characters in her squad and backstories on them, their names, their height, the color of their eyes, their superpowers, their not superpowers, whatever. Let me explain why she's superpowered too, real quick.
Yes, sir.
I'll give away some of the story. So when she gets recruited for this commando time force, right? The human body can't withstand traveling through time without a mechanism. Okay. So in order to be able to withstand time travel, they do these experiments on all the recruits. And what they essentially are for those newbies, normies, they're like the experiments that Deadpool goes through to become a mutant in the first movie. Okay. It's like Weapon X type stuff. They have to be experimented on until their body mutates a superpower from the experiments. Misty America's power is that no matter how many times you punch her in the face, you smack her over the head with a baseball bat, maybe you're in bed having rough sex with her, the more pain she endures and the more her body is put through, the more powerful she becomes. So if you punch her in the face, she absorbs all that energy. Even though her eye is bloody and her lip is bloody, she absorbs everything you give her and she throws it back at you times 10. So if you can imagine Black Panther's suit in the Marvel movies, every time he gets blasted or hit, he absorbs the power and is able to shove it back. I'll pick another character, Bishop in the X-Men. You hit him, he gets stronger. Let's go Dragon Ball Z. The more you hit Goku, the more powerful he levels up to. You know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Okay, so that's what we're looking at. Speaking of Goku and Dragon Ball Z, I had to show this off since you have All Might in your graphic. I have the same one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a Chris Sabat autographed All Might.
All Might, yeah.
I have a bunch of these. I have a bunch of these and Vegeta autographed by him. Every time he comes to MegaCon in Florida, my son is a huge Dragon Ball fan and he knows him by sight. And he will, no matter how much I pay or don't pay, Chris Sabat pulls him out, grabs my camera, and takes as many selfies with my son and me as we want. He's the best student.
How old? You're a little bit older, as you said. Isn't your son's probably an older guy at this point?
No, right? My son's only 14.
Okay. How did he feel when Akira Toriyama passed away?
Oh, it was devastated.
Yeah, I know that must suck, having the person that created something you love so much just pass away.
Yeah, you know, he was devastated. I mean, it wasn't to tears or anything, but he was bummed.
It's one of those ones where you were sad for a day or two, yeah.
He was bummed out, you know, mm-hmm. so, you know. But he's a strong kid. He's lost his mom, so losing...
I know how he feels. I lost my mom, so I know how he feels. Sorry. Yeah.
So, you know, losing an artist. But Dragon Ball has got him through a lot in his life, so... Dragon Ball has helped him level up, so... Yeah. You know, it's important though, you know, and hopefully that legacy continues with whoever was entrusted to it.
This is what I wanted to ask you, the few last things. I'll do this big one first then. How do you improve at your art, actually? Because you do everything. So you don't have to hire a letterer or interior artist or an illustrator or an inker. You do everything. How did you get better at all those jobs then?
I just got better by the amount of pages I did. When I did Oh My God, you know, there was a big improvement from issue 1 to issue 6. When I got to issue 6, I was firing on all cylinders. I was, you know, experimenting more with angles and backgrounds and things like that. Whereas my first few issues were very rudimentary, you know. And, you know, and when I did Venerella 1... I had, as I said, 120 pages in my, you know, in my hand. You know, it's like muscle memory. So when I did Vanarell 1, all of a sudden my layouts got really intense, got really whatever. And also the subject matter was really cool. I was doing dungeons and space hangars and to be honest with you, just like, you know, a half naked alien girl kind of inspires you to draw better. So, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, and as I said, as I went through, oh my God, as I was going through the issues, I got, you know, my layouts got better, my whatever. I was stealing more ideas from books that I was reading. I was reading a lot more too. You know, it's okay. I've never copied anything. I've never looked at a page in a comic and said, oh, let me copy that. But I will look at a page in a comic and I will say, wow, I like that idea. I'm going to incorporate that pose.
Yes.
And I'm not like, I never have the book open while I'm drawing, but I'll take a picture of it or something. If I come across something I see in a comic, and I'll be like, hey, I'm going to use something like that in my next issue. And it's really just for inspiration. It's not for thievery, but I mean, let's face, you know, a lot of my idols from the 70s, you know, the guys that were doing two books a month, they were stealing everything from everything. You don't have the internet. You can't really see where it is, but you know, I don't know how to draw a car or a helicopter or a plane from memory, but you know, you have to look it up, you know, but I can draw people. I just, you know, like even the Uzi in Misty America here. I mean, let's face it. I kind of know what an Uzi looks like, but I had to like look it up online and say, okay, well, where's the handle in relation to the sight, and you know, things like that. In this new Misty America 2, Misty is now in 1944, days before the Normandy invasion of France in World War II, and the pivotal point of, you know, the turning of the war. And I had to look up Lugers, which are German 9mm pistols. Mm-hmm. I had to look up uniforms, you know, like, you know, if you're drawing a Nazi uniform, you need to kind of get it kind of close. You know, and even stuff like I'm going to have to draw some vehicles in this. And, you know, it was easy because in Misty 1, I drew a tank, but it was a modern tank. In this issue, I'm going to have to draw a Panzer German tank or a Sherman USS, you know, United States tank. And, you know, those are 80 years old. So I got to kind of look them up a little bit. But I'm up for the task. I'm excited about it. You know, Misty has a kind of Andrew Sisters look in this one, you know, got a nice 1944, got the hairstyle, got the clothes, got all that stuff.
Yes.
You know, and you know, the hairstyles are different. Everything's different, you know, but when I did Misty America 1, you know, I got her in a, you know, a modern tank, you know, modern guns, modern tanks. And even that wasn't modern because that was 1998. So I had to look up things that were, you know, relevant for 1998. You know, as you can see, all the pages of Misty America, everything's, you know, everything's Bristol board panels, you know, all kinds of, there she is getting experimented on in a vat of chemicals, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And again, you know, it's about my love of creating stuff, and I'm really into the character. And again, I want just people to go back it. So, you know, if you're watching this or you're watching replay,
yes,
back it. I think I know I sent you a private chat the link. You know, if you could share the link somewhere in there. And again, I'm just trying to continue my crowdfunding so I can put out Misty America 3 and continue and end Venerella 3. Venerella is going to have a 3-issue arc. And then if I continue, it'll be like, I'll go to issue 4, but at least story-wise, you know.
It will conclude
And by the way, that's the way I create, you know, I was on a stream a couple of days ago and people asked me, well, how do you write? Well, here's what I do. I know how it starts and how it ends.
Okay? That middle part's always the hardest thing.
Well, the thing is too, is I'm drawing it myself. Mm-hmm. So I have the ability to call audibles on myself. You know, I don't have to stick to a plan. If a fight scene that I was planning to do for 4 pages with this dialogue, all of a sudden I do it in 2, well, then some of the dialogue goes away. Or maybe I I feel like doing an epilogue or something, you know, like in Misty America One, not Misty America, in Venerella One, Venerella, it starts out with Venerella's in an airlock and she kills a whole bunch of people. Okay. Mm. Spoiler. Well, I was halfway through the book and I decided, let me do an epilogue. A little epilogue, and we get introduced to the main protagonist, the main antagonist, which is this guy with a star or with a scar over his eye. Oof. And the reason he becomes the main antagonist for the rest of the story is because one of the humans that she killed in the beginning, that's his son. Mm-hmm. So now he's wants his vengeance. So it's an interstellar vengeance tale. You know, but as I said, as I draw it, things change. And that's my process. And I don't have to answer to anybody because I don't have a writer or a co-creator or anything like that.
There's no editor being like, yeah, those boobies are too big.
No, I'm the editor. And, you know, and the thing is, too, I spend a lot of time editing it. Like when I finish a book, like even the page that's the inside page. Mm-hmm. That's retelling the story of the issue before. Let's see this right here. This says story so far for Venerella 2. So it tells you everything that happened in Venerella 1. I go through that stuff with fine tooth comb 20 times, you know, and, you know, because I want to make sure everything's grammatically correct. I want to make sure there's no typos in the book. I want to make sure everything, you know, flows right. Mm-hmm. Because again, I'm hoping that they just don't buy this for the cover.
Yes.
I'm hoping they actually open it up and read it. And and sometimes like people that I know that are both fans and friends, I'll quiz them. I'm like, so how did it end? You know, and I'll bust their balls if they don't tell me. Cause I'm like, you know what? I didn't want you to buy it just because you're my buddy.
Yeah.
I wanted you to buy it really because you were interested in the story, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, and not that I'm pretentious or anything. You can just pay me money and I'll send you the book.
That's always good.
But I do want it. That's like putting a song out and them not listening to it.
Yeah. You know? I think family's the worst ones of that. Like family and friends are probably the worst. It's actually that's the reason why a lot of people don't share their stuff to their family and friends because they know.
No one in my family buys it. They have no idea what I'm doing. You're like, what are you doing? You're on YouTube doing what? You know, but yeah, so I'm going to do a couple of comic conventions, locally, Florida conventions this year. And then, I'm going to do a in-store signing in Florida, in a Florida comic book store for Free Comic Book Day. And I'm going to give away a bunch of Venerella comics and all that now, you know, but again, I'm Anthony Sica, creator of Venerella, Misty America. Please back Misty America 2 today. Support America, Misty America number 2. Yes,
sir, and the
future. What's your deal, Master Swag King? I want to tell you. Tell me about yourself, real quick.
Well, you know, I watch CNN, and Don Lemon's my hero, so I guess that pretty much says everything. No, it's not true at all. Then I'd get a rope and hang myself. Well, your comic books and me. Everyone knows I love comics more than anything in the world. The way I had to even consume them was crazy because I had to call it kind of like get them through like unconventional means because we don't have a comic book shop around my area. The closest ones are like 30 minutes down the hill, which really? And there's quite a few in that area. And it's just, you know, everyone has like said that they have comic shops around them and then they don't go. I'm like, you don't know how lucky you have it to have a shop around you.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't have that. I wish I could go to the shop every Wednesday and buy my, you know, comics that I have on my pull list. I still buy new stuff. I buy old stuff. I buy new stuff.
And so do I.
I've never been one of those people where, you know, like a content creator that people like will be like, this comic book sucks. Well, you might think that, and that might be true in your opinion, but I would like to buy it for myself and read it for myself and see if I like it. Because, you know, that's just how I've always functioned like that. You know how a lot of people will go like, but well, my favorite content creator, he didn't like this movie. And I'm like, that's fine if they didn't like it. That's no problem. But that doesn't mean you wouldn't like it if you watched it.
You know, art is subjective.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an artist. I've done, listen, I've done art for money, being a graphic designer at ad agencies for 30 plus years. I might think I designed the best thing in the world, and the client will look at it and say, I hate this. Okay. They won't even be subjective or whatever, objective. They're just going to be blunt.
Yeah.
Right. So, because the thing is that that's what art is. Music's the same way. Television's the same way. Movies are the same way. Look, there are, and what's sad is, getting back to our Silver Surfer conversation.
Yes.
Like, only the people, nerds like us, care about this shit. No one else does. No one knows who the Silver Surfer is if they haven't seen the movie. And then millions of people do because of pop culture. Joe Satriani put an album out, Surfing with the Alien. It has the Silver Surfer in it. Richard Gere has a great movie that came out in the 80s called Breathless, where he plays a kind of a douchebag. But there's the hottest girl in it who he falls in love with, it, and she's naked half the movie. His idol is the Silver Surfer, and he's reading Stanley and Jack Kirby's Silver Surfer books the whole time throughout the movie. And this goes back to like 1982 or something. But honestly, Marvel and DC, no matter what you think about them, still some of their worst comics are still better than what's out there on Kickstarter and Indiegogo.
That's the hard reality, man.
It is, though.
I do buy indie comic books. I've actually, for anyone who doesn't know, I did a channel update, and I'm going to have a channel that's just dedicated to comic book reviews, news, and some of the manga, too. I've told people is, I will, because people always ask me, am I going to do indie book reviews? Well, we do. I did indie book reviews. I've reviewed Eric July stuff, all of his books. I reviewed Screecher. Just reviewed The Remnant issue number 0 from Grok Comics. You know, we reviewed all that stuff. It's not that we don't want to review indie stuff. It's just more like, I'm not going to be that guy where if I like you and we've talked, then I'm going to be fair. I'll like your work. That's what I've always told people is, I think that the problem with critiquing Marvel and DC stuff is because we don't have an inherent attachment to those people. They're just putting out comics and we may or may not like them. Well, when I talk to you and I talk to the people when I have on the shows, I don't want people coming this way where if I even get your book, that won't mean I like your book. It's the same thing, you know?
Right. Well, like for example, I just picked up, I haven't bought new comics in a long time, but I picked up the new Ghost Machine stuff by Jeff Johns.
I have too. Yeah.
And I haven't gotten a chance to read Rook yet and Redcoat and the other thing, but I plan to do a review on that on my own channel because I read the little, you know, that Ghost Machine I've read Geiger, the miniseries, and I've read Junkyard Joe. And I like that stuff a lot. And I think it's fantastic. And it's better than anything on the indie scene. And I'm a huge Ethan Van Sciver Cyberfrog fan. I love his art. And I love his storytelling. Okay? I'm not even going to comment on personality. I love that character and those comics. However, I will say that Jeff Johns' new Ghost Machine stuff is better than anything being created by indie people.
Yes.
And also it comes out monthly or bi-monthly or whatever. And that is something that DC and Marvel will always, and Image will always have over the indie scene. And that's the point. That's like saying Taylor Swift, right? And some punk band out of Sacramento. Taylor Swift is always going to sell millions of copies. Whether you hate her or not, it doesn't matter. She's still the mainstream. And I'm just using her as an example.
Yeah.
Okay? It could be anyone. Justin Bieber, Taylor Swift, Led Zeppelin. Let's go classic rock. Everybody's like, oh, the greatest band of all time. But you know what? Some people might not think so.
Well, it's the sheer backing of it. Because I don't feel like people understand the reason why they can put out a lot of books is because they have, it's like any business. They have many other people in other different divisions that can do all those jobs. Don't understand how comics works. You have to do every job yourself. They have people that can do every job. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's much different. And then also the money. It's the backing. They have essentially, I'll say unlimited money, but they have enough money to front all their upfront costs.
They're a corporation; they can do whatever they want. Yeah. But the thing is, let's be realistic now. Mm-hmm. Since you brought up Eric July, I'm not so much a detractor, but I don't really like his artwork or his lack of.
Well, he's not an artist, actually. Maybe what? Well, he's not an artist. He'd be the writer.
I don't think he's anything, to be honest with you, as far as even a writer. I think his stuff is awful, but that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. Okay? I'm not stating that objectively. But my point is when, if you brag that, oh, we sold 18,000 copies of Yaira or whatever, dude, if you sold 18,000 copies of Spider-Man, Marvel would be out of business. Mm-hmm. Okay? The thing is that Marvel and DC only charge $3.99, $4.99 for their books. Independent creators charging $35, $45, $75, whatever, mm-hmm. because they're selling packages. It's not the same, and you'll never compete. When Yaira or Isom or Alpha Corps or any of that stuff is in comic book stores, then he can talk about being an alternative to DC mm-hmm. and Marvel. The alternative to DC and Marvel happened in 1992. It was called Youngblood, Spawn, Wildcats, and all that shit. Image was the alternative to Marvel and DC. Distribution at a higher level, and Image Comics for a while was the number two company in the world. They outsold DC for almost a year straight. Mm-hmm. That's not subjective. That's objective facts. They were selling millions of books for $3.99.
Yes.
When Ethan Van Sciver sells Cyberfrog, he sells in the 20,000s or whatever, mm-hmm. the top. Yeah, and Eric July sells in the 20s and 30,000s, top.
Yeah.
They will never eclipse that, pun intended, for this Monday. So the thing is there will always be mainstream comics. But the point is that support indie comics because they're indie comics. And what I don't like about the Ripperverse, and I'm sorry if this offends you or any listeners.
I don't get that by anything. I like discussion, actually.
But what happens is he is really just a farm now and a company that hires writers and artists. That's exactly what Marvel and DC do. They're a company that hires people to do their stuff. Instead of being like, I'm not even going to bring EVS, but myself, mm-hmm. I do everything. I don't have people. I don't have a couple of sisters writing my books. It's me. So my point is that don't become what you despise, A, and B, come to the realization that Marvel and DC have 100 years of history.
Okay. Yeah.
And, honestly, I'm going to say this is not subjectively, but objectively, and if it hurts, it hurts. The worst issue of She-Hulk that came out this year is still 10 times better than a lot of indie books out there.
Well, I'll tackle the three things that you said. So we'll start with the She-Hulk thing.
Please.
That's the thing is, since, well, you brought it up earlier, we wouldn't know that. No one even read it, actually. Right. We wouldn't know if it was objectively good. I don't read She-Hulk stuff. She's a character I kind of like to a certain extent. No, I think she's funny.
I was just saying, I picked up a random issue a few months ago, and I read it, and I was like,
She-Hulk, the new series she has right now. Okay.
No, I'm talking about something new. And I picked it up out of Lark because I thought the cover was interesting, and I was picking something else up. So it was almost like when you're a kid and you buy a pen, you can't imagine, but when we were kids in the 80s and we wanted to buy a Playboy or a Penthouse magazine, mm-hmm. you wouldn't leave with just that magazine. You would have to buy a bag of chips and some Kleenex, possibly, appropriately. Yeah. Or you would buy People, Rolling Stone, and any other magazine that was there, mm-hmm. and you would hide it in the pile. So the cashier would just scan it and you'd be gone. But my point is sometimes we have guilty pleasures like that as comic readers. No problem.
Dude, I'll be honest here. I buy comics from a series a lot of people probably don't even like, actually. I buy some of the new Batman Brave and the Bold stuff. I have those stuff right here. I have all this new stuff over here. You know,
this
stuff's probably all pretty bad. But
nothing wrong with that.
Gotta read it.
Is that the stuff that Mark Waid is writing, or is that the
Mark Waid does World's Finest. He was doing Shazam. he's going to be on Absolute Power coming up very soon.
And I bought, you know what? And Mark Waid is a pompous kind of jerk, but you know what?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
But let me tell you something. He sure can write a story, actually. But those first three issues of World's Finest were fantastic. Fantastic. And see, that's the thing is that's my subjectivity.
Yeah.
But objectively, Mark Waid is an asshole. By the way, I mentioned my biggest creative influence, John Byrne.
Yeah.
Okay. John Byrne is an asshole. He always has been.
A lot of these guys are assholes. Yeah.
Most artists are assholes. But the point is, he is an asshole. He's burnt a lot of bridges in the industry. He's not working for Marvel right now because of burning bridges. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is he should be. The guy's like 70 something years old, hasn't lost any of his talent. John Byrne is still a master. If John Byrne drew the X-Men right now, they would be a million seller. Easy. People don't understand that, but he's a curmudgeon. He's a nasty.
Yeah. So my thing, when you brought up earlier about the Yaira numbers and all that stuff. So for me, the way I look at it, this is how I see things. It would be terrible and good to a certain extent, because it would actually be beneficial to indie creators in general. I think it would be very bad for Marvel or DC if any of their flagship characters to have lower sale numbers than any indie creator. That would show how bad Spider-Man has gone to the point where like a random buttfuck nobody could outsell. Right. So the other thing that I would say is, because I think what some people don't understand is not everyone can do it. I can't do these things on my own. If I ever had a company, I couldn't do these things on my own. I would have to hire someone. Right. You know, and all businesses hire people for things that they can't do. Like editors, like Jim Lee, he can't do all that stuff either. That's why you have people that hire people. No. I think what a lot of people tend to forget when it comes to this stuff is, Eric's not the end all be all for indie comic books, actually. He's just a decent big example of it happening right now, which is fine.
He's great at marketing.
Yeah.
Okay. But he's really bad.
I think marketing is the very biggest part, is because if you're not actually good at marketing, well, that's how you get people to buy your stuff. You know those ads you used to have back in the day? Like those girls, those naked girls would say the freaking Carl's Jr. burger. Effectively, that would make burgers sell more.
Right. But if you get to Carl's.
Yes.
And the hamburger tastes like shit, then you got a problem.
Yes. Yes. But the commercial that led you there to do it is what it was effective in doing.
But my problem, and I'll argue this to my grave. The quality.
You got a long time for that. Yeah, like a lot
quality,
of people.
Not really. The quality of the work he's putting out, though, is really shitty. It's like the worst 90s early. We just learned how to draw and color product out there, and he's got decent artists, and they're cheating him. You know,
that's your thing is that the money, the people that he's hiring, you don't think he's getting his bang for his buck with hiring these certain people. Is that where you're coming from?
He is, but Kanan White knows how to draw. The girl that did Yaira,
Deborah Cornita. Yeah.
Her art on her portfolio and her pinups are nice, but those samples that they showed were god awful. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's not subjective. They were bad. They look very amateurish. Artist subjective. So Mike Mignola, who's a respected and revered artist, he did Hellboy. He has a really weird style that is not everyone's cup of tea. Everyone has a style, but the problem is everything I've seen from Eric July's company is very generic. It doesn't have a style. And only when you see Joe Bennett stuff in there does it kind of look like Joe Bennett. But Joe Bennett's stuff in Alpha Corps and then his stuff when he did the Hulk is like night and day. I don't think these folks that are working for him, because it's not their creator-owned IP, I think they're just kind of like going to Walmart and collecting a paycheck and leave it. And that's why Cliff Williams or Cliff Richards, whoever did the first issue of Isom and then Isom 2, that's why all this 3D stuff came out. That's why all this criticism came out, because this guy really didn't put work into it. The backgrounds, the physical poses, all that stuff is really, dude, you could break my hand and I could draw better than that. And I'm not a pro. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem that I see, is that your marketing is Disney level. Okay. And then your product is Sharknado.
Yeah. Cause I think for me, a lot of people have to understand marketing is a very big thing, to the point where if you haven't effectively marketed your stuff, not saying you specifically, but this is in general.
I haven't.
Andrew Tate, for example, right? If Andrew Tate's on something and he says buy this, people are going to buy it because he has an effective way of getting people to buy this stuff. Now,
that's argument too, if I can interject for 1 second.
Yes.
These folks that are getting into comics, they don't have a history of loving comics and they're not comics.
Everyone has a star basis. Yeah.
Right. They're YouTube influencers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And when you have a demographic of 1 million people watching you, mm-hmm. then yeah, you're gonna sell some shit. But mm-hmm. like some people have said, he could have came out with a coffee brand and people would have bought it.
Yeah.
The thing is that the guy does not know a lot about comics, and you can tell mm-hmm. because he must be making the final decisions, just like Andrew Tate would. Andrew Tate did a comic. It looks like ass, you know.
I don't know what artist he hired. Did that look? I'm not trying to be a dick, but that art just looks really bad. That just looks blotchy, and it just look. It's that weird art style where, like, I can't. Dude, the colors are like off the characters.
It's just bad. It's bad stuff. And like I said, the Carl's Jr. or McDonald's or any company, Olive Garden, any Outback Steak, their marketing could be primo, could be the best marketing in the world. But when the people go to eat there and the food tastes like shit, they're going to tell you. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with this criticism.
You yourself are an artist. So the average person, I'll be honest, I really... with the whole like 3D acid thing, or if people are favored for it or not favored for it, I don't personally care, if I'm being honest here.
Yeah. But my point is,
it's one of those things where, like, if people are arguing that manga artists use it for a deadline, then it's one of those things where if it doesn't take away from the actual story itself and people are just using it just for reference, I just don't see the big issue with it. I think people are way overblowing stuff like that. It's not that big a deal.
But if you pick up the last 6 issues of Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super, right?
Which I have. Yeah, I have those.
Right, okay. Yeah. And so do I. I have them on the shelf, mm-hmm. right? My son gets them every time they come out, right?
Were they up to 19? Those will be coming out for a while because, you know.
Yeah, they're up to 19 or 20 now or whatever. but here's my point.
Yes.
Here's my point. When you open up volume 18 mm-hmm. and you open up volume 16, mm-hmm. doesn't matter how many people he's got working on that. Mm-hmm. It could be 20 Koreans drawing that a month. Mm-hmm. It's still got the same style. The art style is consistent, mm-hmm. and it's consistently good.
That was the criticism I had for I Saw Him too, because I like Eric's stuff. I bought the books, we reviewed them. I even had a whole video on my channel saying the good and the bad, what could the comics improve on. I think the biggest thing the comics could improve on is not even just with art in some areas. I should agree with that. Characters. So I don't think the characters are as bad as people point out. I've actually read some really awful stuff in my life in terms of comics. I think the biggest issue with Eric's stuff as far as what I brought up in the video, which is Isom. So Isom's biggest thing in issue 2 was that he quit. So, and then we kind of, you know, glance over that a little bit to go to the world building stuff. And I think personally, if we're going to be focusing on something as big as that with the character quitting and it, like, and it shows why he quit. It was a reasonable reason why he quit. Someone died under his superhero watch. That's fine. That's a trauma will make anybody do something crazy. Right. Make someone give up. I think the book should have focused more on, like, okay, so if he quit being a superhero, then kind of like, why don't we see his day-to-day operation? So like, let's say he's being a superhero. Let's say, you know, he drives a truck. Let's say he sees a homeless person getting mugged, or let's say a woman getting mugged. Well, what does he do about that? The book didn't show that, and I thought that was the reason why I thought issue 1 was better than issue 2, is because if I'm a reader and I like what I'm getting, and you're telling me this character had a big traumatic event that traumatized him to the point where he's not going to be a superhero, then I need to know what was his day-to-day operations as, like, when he sees crime happening and doesn't do anything.
Right, you know? And that could have been told.
That's my biggest problem with issue 2.
a two-page caption could resolve these things. And what that really results in, Master Swag King, is it's a person that hasn't read enough comics in their life to tell a story when they have the opportunity. A filmmaker, filmmakers study film before they make their first film. A person who writes a book has to have read a lot of books before they sit down and write their book. And by the way, a person that creates his own comic book, even if it's just in the writing stage, you have to read about 30 to put 10, you need to put 10,000 hours in reading comics, just like anything else in life. 10,000 hours is what you need to be a good pilot. It's what you need to be a good athlete. It's what you need to be a good musician. And it needs to be in your craft, whatever you do creatively. You cannot just pick up a pen and say, I'm going to be the next Stan Lee. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Okay? And the other thing,
I don't care how much innate talent you have. Everyone's first job, Brian Michael Bendis, Tom King, Stan Lee, you could go, you know, you can mention every author in mainstream comics. Their first comics are not fully matured. They haven't got their style down pat. And like I said, in my own case, I self-published six books before I made a public outing of a crowdfunded book. And I am nowhere near Eric July. I'm not even a pimple on his ass. But the point is, though,
that would be pretty weird if you were.
I can tell. Well, I mean, I meant successful or whatever. But my point is, though, I know damn well that I could tell a better story in 8 pages than he can in 100, because he doesn't have the experience as an editor, a writer, or a creator. You know, and what I don't like about the books, Isom 1 and 2, is that the character of Isom and every character in the book is not consistent throughout the book. You'll be in the same spread and all of a sudden it looks like a different character, or the art style is all over the place, or it's fluid. One panel, it's fluid and very comic book like, and it has motion. And the next panel, it's stiff. And the guy's just standing there like a 3D asset.
So for me, I think that, because the point you brought up earlier with, you know, taking time to hone in your style, I think a lot of people haven't been giving enough reverence for time to get better. Because obviously you were around for a little bit longer than I was when this happened with Image and Marvel and DC. Their stuff wasn't as good for a certain while. It takes time to get better over time. I think people got to understand when it comes to indie creators and anybody doing this stuff just starting, there's going to be time. There's going to be a rough period. There's rough periods in everything. So you have to take time to get better. And I think even like other artists that criticize him have to understand if people go with the logic that he's new, then that's going to be the period you have to go through. Right. This person's new and you have to get better. And I think I do agree. There's things the books can improve on. I don't know why people keep saying they're perfect. I found them okay. You know, I don't think they're perfect, obviously, you know, but I think people think that they're great or perfect. They're like, I think that's crazy, but you know, all personal opinion.
The thing is though, is that the people saying that are fans first and comic lovers enthusiasts, maybe second. And I think there is a little bias, you know, toward everything. And my mom is going to say I'm the best comic book.
Of course,
You know, but the point is objectively and subjectively, I'm not, and I know that. And the thing is, too, is I can get better with every issue. You know, it's good to be to improve, but it's also good to be self-aware. It's also good to take your time and read things that you write down on paper and draw. And it does help when you have a 100-page book submitted, and it is. It sells 2 million copies. You should, as the person that runs that company and commission that work, you should sit down and be able to tell, gee, does this look like it was written by drawn by a human hand? Because a lot of it wasn't, dude. And the truth of the matter is that's kind of embarrassing, because to offer that then as the next Stan Lee and the next alternative to Marvel and DC is ridiculous. And that's my criticism. I don't care. You could sell 5 million copies, and I hope you do. But the thing is, what that does, though, okay, and I'll say the same thing about some of the comic skaters like Cyberfrog and stuff. Mm-hmm. When you're constantly selling T-shirts and gift boxes and hats and books and all that, creators like myself, the piece of the pizza pie that we can get from indie crowd is smaller and smaller.
Yes.
And that's not sour grapes. It's not jealousy. Okay. That's just what it is, if you're spending $300, or by the way, if you're buying a, I'll criticize Ripa one more time. If you order a $75 book that's only 8 pages and has a blank cover, and the inside looks like dog shit, and what I'm referring to is his sketchbook, that the art of Isom.
I was never into like I'm not a person that's into like art covers, not art.
But my point, is it's 8 pages, dude. It's 8 pages, and the pages inside are crap. They're just hand drawn. It looks like a 5-year-old sketched them. With color dabs and then bios that are written poorly, he's charging $75 and shipping for that. So my point is, though, when you're in this indie sphere that we're in, well, if you just spent $1,000 this last month crowdfunding and backing these huge creators, you don't have an extra $15 to buy my book. Okay. Because the economy sucks. People have lost their jobs. And maybe some of the people that are buying these comics live in their mother's basement still anyway. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm just stating fact. You know, so the thing is, you either have to have a winning personality online, like we do, or you have to have a quality product. And the thing is that when quantity becomes more important than quality, the indie comic sphere and the mainstream comic sphere suffers. The fact that Marvel and DC, the only way they can get sales now is by having 20 variant covers for every issue, is ridiculous.
Mostly out of two characters.
When I was a kid, you'd go to the gas station, there was one cover, and the comic was 35 cents. And you know what? They were making millions of dollars back then. You know, because it was everywhere. You don't understand. I don't know. I'm thinking you're in your 20s.
I'm 29.
Okay. So I was right. I'm 53. Yeah. In 1980. Okay. And by the way, there were comic book stores starting in, I think, 1974.
Yes.
Direct market stores. But in 1980, you walked into any store, toy store, department store, convenience store, candy store. They used to be called candy stores, where you'd buy your newspaper and your chocolate and shit.
Yes.
And your Hallmark cards, you know, for your greeting cards for birthdays. And so convenience stores, bookstores, toy stores, dude, every gas station right next to the counter, they had a comic book rack, 35 cents. So if you're in the car with your parents, you could literally find the coins and the cushions of the seats and go buy some comic books. That was how accessible they were. And we didn't have bags and boards, dude. You used to put them in stacks in your closet and hope the dog didn't eat them. You know, that's how it was. And back then, the comics were good. And I'm not saying that from the nostalgia point. It's not. When people say the Beatles are a good rock band, they're not saying it because they're nostalgic. Objectively, they were a good rock band or a good musical act.
Yeah.
Frank Sinatra was a great singer. It's not nostalgia. It's truth. Elvis was a great singer. I'm not a fan of Elvis, but
I was more of a Michael Jackson fan, but you know,
Michael Jackson. Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. Doesn't matter whether he diddled with kids or not. He was still a good singer. Okay, because that was then and this is now. All right. Bill Cosby was a great comedian. Doesn't matter what crimes he committed. When he was around on TV, he was a great comedian. Okay. people have to get over nostalgia, basing things on nostalgia. Michael Jackson's a good artist. Prince is a good artist. Okay, period. This end of story. Run DMC, the Wu-Tang Clan, good artists. I'm from Staten Island. I'm from Staten Island originally.
They're from New York. Oh, crap. Oh, gosh. Okay.
All right. So my point is, you know, it's not open for discussion or argument about the validity of Madonna in the 80s. She may be worthless now, but in the 80s, she was a prime pop culture force. Beastie Boys, whatever. You know, I can go on and on. And at the same time, you can say whatever you want about the art of Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee, Mark Silvestri, and Todd McFarlane. They changed the game in the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
Okay. They sold 5, 3, and 8 million copies of one single comic book.
Yes.
Okay. That would be Spider-Man, X-Force, and X-Men in a row. 3 million, 5 million, 8 million. That is unheard of. Mm-hmm. You could take every publisher, independent publisher right now, and they couldn't sell 3 million copies. They could make $3 million, but they could never sell 3 million copies.
Yeah, okay. And I think a lot of people need to understand, it just takes time for a lot of the stuff to get better and grow over time. I think the biggest problem with any like indie community is everyone is so rushing to, I don't say tear down their artists. Exactly. That's kind of a little harsh. Things just take time to get better. And I think a lot of people don't have that grace period that we allowed for ourselves with other things. You know, if people are going to wait for the MCU to build up over 10 years, I think it's fair that, you know, you wait for the comic book guy to get better over a course of period. But everyone, when their first issue comes out, just goes and jumps on them. And it's like, well, do you want them to get better or do you want them to stop right now? Because I don't know where we're supposed to be aligning our mindsets at.
And does everyone not know that the MCU had some shitty movies in the beginning? They weren't all
it did. Yeah, I'll say the first Incredible Hulk movie is not good. That one, Edward Norton, kind of sucks to me. It's pretty bad. Yeah. But that's just me. Last thing I'll ask you, man, because I have a guy do my next one-on-one, is the first thing is, you got any big plans for yourself coming up at all for us 2024?
Me?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm doing some in-store signings.
Mm-hmm.
I play every month with my band. My band's called Halo Violation. We play monthly, you know, in bars, clubs, whatever. And me just looking for a new job because, as I said, I lost my job after 15 years.
Yeah, sorry, man. That fucking sucks. I'm sorry.
It's really a harmful thing in my life right now and wasn't expecting it. I was blindsided. Mm-hmm. So that's a thing. So, it's just – my biggest thing right now is I'm crowdfunding Misty America and I'm looking for backers. So, you know, I got 14, 15 backers. I'm at $625 with 58 days left, 57 days left. That's fine. But, you know, I've been on a million streams and a million channels in the last 2 weeks. And my first stream I did, I made like 7 or 8 sales in one night. And then since then, I've kind of been spinning my wheels. But I enjoy talking to YouTubers and streamers like yourself because I like talking comics. I like talking pop culture. I like spilling tea somewhat, like I just did, because it makes it interesting. Because see, I don't have anything to lose. I'm just a little fish. The thing is, though, is sometimes people are out of their minds, like. This Ed Piskor thing, you know, I don't know if you know anything about that, but the whole thing's retarded. I mean, you know, I have all of Ed Piskor's work. I used to watch his channel all the time. Mm-hmm. If a 17-year-old or, you know, the whole thing about those girls accusing him of trying to groom them or whatever, look, he never met them in person. All right. So, if anything, Ed Piskor was a creep, but he didn't commit a crime. He didn't assault these women. But he was being a creep. A 40-year-old man should not be stalking 17-year-old girls on anything. Okay. But still, the internet is not real life. If a 40 or 50-year-old man, are you telling me as a 50-year-old man, I don't look at girls on Instagram? Come on.
Yeah.
All right. it just grow up. Okay. That's the way the world is. If you put, and if these girls are putting themselves on Instagram, whether they're a model or just a normal, look, if you're online, you're in the public eye. Okay. If you don't want to be hit on by guys, don't be on the internet. At the same point, all the people that harassed him about it, they were like judge, jury, and executioner before anything was proven or disproven. Now, the fact that he killed himself is the worst part because, dude, it's just the internet. I know that you lost a deal and you felt embarrassed and shamed and comic books is your life and all that. But dude, there's nothing worth killing yourself over. Absolutely nothing. Nothing.
That's true. I agree.
So the truth of the matter is, you know, he listed a bunch of names, comic journalists and SJW types that were harassing him, trying to cancel him because of this thing. Well, you know, Ed, you could have just turned your internet off and not listened. Everybody's accusing people of murdering Ed Piskor. I was a big fan of Ed Piskor's, but Ed Piskor murdered himself. He killed himself. No one killed him. No one physically killed him. Now, if they hurt his feelings or shamed him or tried to cancel him, that's one thing, Master Swag King. But the point is, if people watch your show and they're like, listen to this asshole, blah, 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 guess what? I don't care if they leave me 1,000 comments and they tell me I can never work at DC and Marvel again. I wasn't working there to begin with. But the point is, there's a thing called sticks and stones.
Yeah.
Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Yeah.
We all need to get back to that shit, dude.
Like, oh, no. I grew up with that. I grew up in a time period, in, you know, 90s growing up where you say some shit to someone, they punch you in the face.
Right. But me and you, you know, me and you, we might not agree on anything, but look at this polite, gentle conversation we're having. It's lovely. It's about pop culture. It's about TV.
The thing I'll bring up to your Ed Piskor situation, because I got to get to my next guest, is I – because one of my favorite actors did this in Power Rangers, Jason Dierenfeld. He offed himself too. And I love Jason Dierenfeld. I think his work was awesome for the franchise. But I always, even with him, and I have to be, I'm always consistent with this. I've always said this even when I was younger. I think killing yourself is just a bitch made thing to do. Right. I think it's just the worst thing to do. Like, you know how, you have a son.
Prove your guilt too, by the way.
It takes a long time to raise a kid, and you all that money invested, everything involves a raising kid and having a family in. How much it hurts someone when someone dies. I would like just thinking about that in my brain. I would never want to cause it to somebody, you know? Like I've lost my mom a long time ago and it sucks really bad. And it's like people need to understand if you do that, the person that's also doing that, like his mom is devastated. She'll never get him back ever. He can't we're not incompetent. We can't just revive people when we want to.
Right.
We can't make variants. We can't make clones of these people. You know, I think for me, and with men more than women, really just throws me off of it. I'm just saying, like, any guy that does that, you just took the bitch way out. Like you I can't believe these people always parade about being so tough and strong, but when they're faced with any level of anything, it just no way you should be able to do that. I'm just saying, like, that is such a selfish thing to do. It just is.
And to premeditate it so much with a 5-page suicide note, like, what the? I mean, you know, I think I really enjoyed his work and I was a fan of his YouTube channel. But the guy was not living in reality because the guy was so wrapped up in comic books and a fantasy world that he even played his last days out like a fantasy world. He wrote a 5-page suicide.
Yeah, we're actually going to cover that on my panel show later on.
It's insane.
Oof,
And by the way, if you bought and read Red Room, I don't even think the guy was all there anyway, reading that.
The last thing I'll ask you is, you got any shout outs you want to give to anyone in particular? Anything else you want to say before you head out?
No, just back Misty America, back Misty America, back Misty America, back Misty America. As other creators, you're all on your own. But if you want a true indie comic from a person that loves comic books, and that would never kill himself over a comic book or what people think of his comic book.
Yes, sir.
Support America, support Misty America. Again, single issues are $15 and bundles are $35. And the thing is like, please, please, please start sharing what you love and stop talking about what you hate. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Period. Like, I got to tell you something. I watched some movies this year that I adored, but if I told you which movies they were, you'd either say I have a vagina or I'm gay or whatever. But you know what? It doesn't matter. What it is I enjoyed stuff. I enjoy stuff for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I enjoy it. I don't care if you like it. I don't care if the guy at the comic book store likes it. I don't care if the guy that owns my LCS likes it. I don't care if my customers like it. I don't care if my son likes it. I don't care. You know, that's the thing is like people got to stop being so tribal. And yeah. So, mm-hmm. You know, and again, we get in the nerd culture, we're all about that to kind of a default.
Yeah.
And problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't like Brie Larson, I'll use an example. You can still enjoy a movie she's in. Doesn't matter.
There's been movies she's been in where I don't think she's been the worst thing ever. I don't think she should have been in it, but that's just me.
But guess what, though? But understand, it's a character. If you don't like Robert De Niro, but you love every Robert De Niro movie, that's fine. They're actors. They're playing pretend.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, and by the way, these comic books, they're lines on a piece of paper. And that's
what I was going to say for the whole like Eric and all these other indie people. Like, you understand, people are getting literally, I mean, I know you're not like that. You sound like a pretty well-rounded person. Dude, people are getting literally completely losing their minds over characters on a piece of paper. And that at that point, you know what you said earlier. You got to get the fuck off the internet. That's how deranged you are.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, they're all characters. My characters here, they're mine. They're made up. They're not real. So like, what, you know, and again,
not real? What are you saying?
And by the way, let's get back to our original conversation. I'm going to bring this full circle. Who the fuck cares whether the Silver Surfer's got a dick or a vagina? It's not real. It's a character. So, and to be honest with you, I got to tell you something from a very chauvinistic standpoint. If she looks really hot in the silver paint, then I'm all for it. I'm all good.
Well, it's great talking to you, man, for the first time. Can't wait to have you on again in the future. Actually, it was great having a well-rounded discussion with you. And
thanks, brother.
Make sure you guys back Misty America and check out Anthony Sika's Indiegogo page, actually. Even message him on Facebook. He might have some comics laying around for you to purchase directly from him. If you have PayPal or whatever pay service you like to use, that's not through whatever you have. And we'll see you guys later. Have a great night, everybody. Peace out, everybody.